right, let's do this one more time before Christmas. Welcome to Murder Gymnastics, a wrestling podcast. My name is Carl, also known as Mr. Meanie, and with me, being holly jolly over there in Alberta, is my buddy Paul. What's up, bud?
Well, you know, just hanging out with my jingle bells out.
Hey, man, keep this show PG-13. Yeah.
I'll do my best. No guarantees, but, you know, I'll try.
I thought you'd just say, fuck that shit, and then be like, okay, yeah, you're right. There goes the rating.
I didn't want to be too obvious.
Ho, ho, holy shit. It's almost Christmas time.
Yeah, should we just include a cocaine spot and get it over with, or what? Yeah,
right. I'll invite Billy Corgan over, and it can all go to hell. That's right.
There you go.
Cheers, buddy.
Cheers.
Happy holidays. I hope everyone out there is either enjoying the season or not enjoying the season in whatever way you choose to do it. So there's my generic seasonal greeting for everyone out there.
I hope you're meeting the season on the terms that you were most comfortable with.
There they are. There they are.
Could we get more generic than that?
Well, we could, but we won't. We won't.
No, we won't.
Yeah. I love Christmas. So we've been, it's not like a normal Christmas this year because my dad, as you know, has been a little ill. So we've been, presents, all that kind of stuff isn't a priority. But we've been doing the decorating and the Christmas movies and the Christmas drinks and the, haven't done the Christmas baking yet, but that's coming probably this weekend because got to get me some chocolate bonbons and some gingerbread and all the, you know, all the good shit.
Yeah, it's been a weird year for us too. Lots of funerals in my family this year, which really puts a damper on the whole Christmas cheer. So
yeah, that's never what you're going for. No.
So we're just kind of doing a minimalist Christmas this year. Like once it gets to the day, you know, we'll spend it with family and have all that fun. But the decorations and everything, we're doing enough to be in the spirit, but not full blown, you know, tacky Christmas or anything.
Yeah, no, I got you.
In the spirit of the season, that's for sure.
Well, cheers, bud.
And this drink certainly helps. Cheers. What are you sipping on?
It's got some scotch. What are you drinking over there?
I am drinking some Metallica Blackened Whiskey.
Oh, that's a good choice. Love me some Metallica, music and whiskey. So, yeah, you know, life's been busy, but I managed to squeeze in a little bit of wrestling since we talked last, which is good. Something to fucking talk about. Where's a good place to start? You know, WWE, you haven't been watching. I have been watching. It's been good. It's been the CM Punk stress show for us fans that are not happy that he's back. They've been just dangling him. He's on this show. He's on that show. Where is he going to be? I've just come to terms with it. Okay, so he's going to be here. I just hope they find him a story quick because so far there's no story. They're just like showing him off like he's a new car. So it's like, I get
it. Prancing out their new prize pony.
Basically, he hasn't really been looking like I kind of am respecting that they're keeping him in his place. Like Seth Rollins came out and did a promo and really nose to nose just tore him down. And Drew McIntyre has been doing the same thing. So I'm like, they're definitely like not ignoring the past. Maybe this is going to be some sort of either redemption story for him, or it would be really funny if it was like old school Attitude Era and at some point they just throw him under the bus and just like fire him or something. It'd be really funny. But it's been pretty good so far as far as what they're trying to they're toying with the fans. Like they're like seeing how much interest there is, the chants are coming in, but there's still boos coming in. So it's gonna be an interesting little journey here. I don't know where it's gonna go. I hope it doesn't go too far with titles and such as I talked about last time, but it's so far so good-ish. It's not,
they're just still trying to find their footing as to what they're gonna do.
Yeah, and he's still great on the mic, so for all the bad things I say about him, he's an excellent promo guy. So he never wavers. He doesn't seem like he's reading from a script that he wrote in his brain. He has an idea of what he wants to say and he just kind of wings it. And it's very natural. So I do respect that. So we'll just see how the in-ring stuff goes or what, I don't even know what that's going to look like. Who knows what his future in the ring is going to be. It might be a few matches. I don't really know what they're thinking. So he hasn't been great at avoiding injuries. So you know,
he is not.
You got to take that into account when you make such a big deal about something like this. So,
yeah.
Yeah. But in other WWE news, I saw today, thanks to my wife, that today is the 22-year anniversary of the supermarket match. Do you remember Stone Cold Booker T?
I don't think I've ever seen this one.
Oh, Lordy. I'm gonna have to send you a link. Booker T shopping in a grocery store, and it's a real grocery store that they booked for the afternoon. And Booker T is shopping while, and he's feuding with Stone Cold at the time. And he's afraid that Stone Cold is trying to get him around every corner. And he's so paranoid, he starts beating up some random like customers and stuff. And all of a sudden, Stone Cold shows up and they have a full-on brawl through an entire grocery store. And they obviously Vince just like must have paid them $100,000 or whatever it went. We're gonna kind of wreck your store because they destroy it. It is amazing through the coolers, through the fridges, through the produce, through it's you gotta see it. It's fantastic. It's as good
That
as of
sounds like a
a
lot of fun.
oh, it's ridiculous. It's just yeah. So I don't think you could actually get away with that anymore. Like
No.
but it was the Attitude Era. Things were a little weird back then.
Yeah, good thing they're not weird anymore.
Other than CM Punk, Drew McIntyre's heel turn has been really good. I've been just afraid he's gonna leave the WWE, so I'm hoping that they asked him what he wanted, and he said, "I want to be a real big jerk to a lot of people." So, 'cause that's what he's doing, and he's doing it like he's such a huge human that when he wants to be an intimidating jerk, it really comes across like scary. So I hope that this is something that goes longer than just until his contract runs out in January and then he's gone. I'd like to see him just yeah be a nasty heel for a while. It's really working for me, and I can't really imagine it in AEW the way it is right now. So because he's kind of got that size of like there's other guys there already. They're big, tall, broad shouldered. You know, you don't want to just get lost in the sea of giant guys. So
Big guys, yeah.
yeah. Because, as you said the last episode, the big gimmick can sometimes wear thin. So he's got a really good personality with it that is very much story and promo driven, which is very WWE. So we'll see.
Well, and sometimes, as you hear about with like Hollywood actors and everything, playing the villain is so much more fun
Right?
because you can do so much more with it. So yeah, maybe that is exactly it, is he just kind of reached the end of his good guy phase and is like, I just want to have fun. I just want to be an ass to a lot of people.
Exactly. That's something that I was telling you about Santos Escobar having his heel turn. I actually was listening to his, he had a two-part interview on the Freddie Prinze wrestling podcast, Wrestling with Freddie. I'll give a little promo to this guy. Not that he needs it. He's far bigger than I am. But yeah, it was a really great candid interview. I love the shoot interviews, as they say, where they're just talking about the business being the business, not trying to like promote their next story or whatever. It had nothing to do with that. It was a very honest talk about Lucha and about Mexico and about here and how to get over and how he's so much happier being a heel. The chance to just like, it's not so much about, oh, the fans hate me. It's, oh, the reaction that you're getting. Because no reaction is a nightmare, but getting the happy, you know, joyous reaction is really difficult, and it's also really difficult to get that venom from the crowd. Both sides are so difficult, and he the lukewarm is the like the worst. It makes it hard to get out of bed, as he was saying, when you walk out to the, you know,
Polite applause.
yay, or that one
Don't
guy in the
clap.
back that's your fan. It's like, no, you want to get something, and so if you got the whole place hating your guts, that means you're doing something right. And it's not like the old days when they're going to kill you. They're actually just, it's the negative reaction from an audience that's following your story, and you're doing a good job as the villain, making them hate your guts. So,
They're invested. They're invested in your demise because you're the villain, but that's investment.
I love hearing that kind of stories. Those stories are great.
Well, and it's interesting coming from a different perspective as far as working a crowd, right? Because working a crowd and getting heat in Mexico is different than working a crowd and getting heat in North America, much like, you know, what you were just saying. But it's fascinating. And just like in Japan, it's a different psychology over there. So
Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
peek behind the curtain. I always find that stuff really fascinating
Me
too.
too. There's so many good podcast interviews, and it depends on the show. Certain shows, it might just be a promotion show where we're just going to talk about, tell us about your career, describe your, you know, favorite matches, and that's fine. Those are interesting, but I'd rather hear like where they're just talking about the fact that they're performers and that it is a scripted, dangerous acting job they have basically. And I want to hear, why they wanted to do that, how they do it, how they've learned to do it, how they want to get better at doing it. Yeah, it's fun to hear about the crazy bumps and all the crazy stuff they go through, but the psychology of it is just so awesome. I love it. So cool.
Yeah.
Do you watch any AEW?
Actually, I squeezed in a few matches. It's funny. Life has been so busy, as I mentioned on the last podcast. So I was really, I don't know that guilty is the right word, but I was really feeling the lack of AEW in my wrestling watch. I'm like, I really just have to make that concerted effort to just make time for it because I
Yeah.
don't have the time that I did before. But yeah, I actually just before recording, I managed to squeeze in the Claudio versus Eddie Kingston match from this week's Collision.
I have that
And
written here
I
with
will.
the word banger after it. So.
Yeah, actually, it's funny because last podcast, I was throwing Claudio under the bus as like
I
a big
remember.
man who
Yeah.
just did the same move, but to, turn it up to 11. This was the best match I've seen him wrestle the whole time I've been watching AEW, which granted is a short time relatively, but he and I mean I love Eddie Kingston, so I mean that's just a no-brainer that I'm gonna like his part in it. But yeah, these guys, they work really, really well together, and this is apparently the third time they've wrestled this year. I might actually have to go check out the other two.
Now, I'll be honest, when I heard that was the matchup, I didn't think that that was going to match up well because Eddie Kingston's style is very ground and pound. He's not your traditional looking or acting wrestler. Like he's so unconventional in every way. And Claudio is this big, huge power wrestler, right? That does these big dynamic.
Adonis, like
Yeah.
chiseled out of stone.
And but he's so tall and he does these dramatic strength moves, like you were saying last time. And so I thought, oh, how is that gonna work together? And all of a sudden, 12 minutes into the match, I'm like, holy shit, this is really good wrestling. Like, really good. I was like, Eddie Kingston sells so well because he always seems like he's actually in pain. Like, I always believe all of his facial expressions. So, and I think that I saw a couple of real clean shots that they each took from each other. So they were like, they weren't holding back those forearms. They were clocking each other on the jaw. So then you can get the realistic reaction. What am I? Yeah, I was really surprised that that match turned into because it was about 20 minutes. There was probably 20 false finishes. I actually had no clue because the story they were running there, being in the tournament in the Continental Classic, was that Eddie, if he loses, he's pretty much out of the tournament. And so I kept, oh, he's out. Oh no. Oh, they're gonna do the redemption story. Nope, he's out. Like I had no idea where he was going. They really played me. It was an excellent match.
I figured Eddie was going to win just simply because he put his two belts up on the line for the tournament. So I figured he's not going to go out in round robin if he's going to go out. I don't think, but of course, that's how they get you, right? Is
Exactly.
suddenly, oh, guess what? But yeah, when you're saying how he sells, there was a moment where I was legitimately, oh,
Okay.
hello, cat.
We're being invaded by one of my cats. This is Cassian. Hi, Cassian.
Yeah.
Now, the people can't see you and they can't hear you, but trust me, he's adorable and he weighs a ton. And you got to go, buddy. No, you got to find a different place to be.
That's okay. At some point, you'll probably hear my cat Haley, who's been howling tonight. So, it's just part of being a cat, Dad.
I was gonna say this is it's constantly us the world telling us do a cat dad's podcast. That's all this is. That's what Cassian's saying. We're like, come on, Dad, stop talking about wrestling. Okay, I
It's
guess I have a
changed
cat.
gears.
All right, he's on the lap.
There
He's
you go.
happy. I'm happy.
There you go.
Back
But
to
yeah,
wrestling.
just you're talking about Eddie and how he sells in pain. There was a shot, and I mean, I was pretty sure he was mugging for the camera, but his eyes rolled in the back of his head.
I know.
It's like, oh, dude, you do not see that very often.
No, I was positive that that was actual pain, and it maybe it is. Maybe he has tons of pre-existing injuries that just as he's wrestling constantly hurt, and that's like his motivation, or it's all psychological, the way like homicide always seems to be like that, like just psychologically scarred in there, so that's why you believe is selling so much. So
Method acting.
yeah. Now
Yeah.
you mentioned the title belts. I have a question because The Continental Classic confuses me just a little bit. So I know the winner is going to be a what do they call it, a tri champion. I know there's the term they used. I can't remember what it is.
Oh, yeah. I'm blanking on the.
But whatever you get three belts. So there's going to be the Ring of Honor belt, the New Japan belt that Eddie was holding, and then
Yeah.
the brand new Continental Classic or the AEW Continental Champion or whatever they want to call it.
Yeah,
So
I guess so.
I missed somewhere in the history of the starting of this tournament why Eddie put up his titles. I don't get it. Why is he like, how did, like, what was the basis behind that story? Do you know?
They mentioned it briefly in this match where he loves the legacy of the titles, and that there was an older wrestler who I'm blanking on his name right now, but he was the Triple Crown
Triple Crown, that's the
champion
one.
for a long time. And so he just loves the idea of that legacy of the Triple Crown, and that this means so much to him that he wants the stakes. He wants to put his belts on the line.
Okay, so it's okay. Now, so that really makes it interesting how they're gonna write the story then. Like, is now you're like, it kind of really makes it so that you think, well, Eddie's got to win the tournament then and get the titles. But also, his story is always the hard luck story. So I could totally imagine not even getting to the finals, like semifinals, and he loses tragically or something, and then he loses his belts. So, yeah, okay, it's an interesting. I'll give it to him. Maybe the tournament itself is a little complicated with the blue and the gold and all the points and stuff, but I like it still. Being a hardcore wrestler, if you're sort of a casual viewer, I don't know that this tournament style would work because it is very, they put up the blue division or whatever they call it, and they have all the way they show it with the chart and the points on an angle is very confusing. Like, I don't really, it's normally rankings are like top to bottom, and I'm like, this is a bizarre way to do it, but it's very niche for this type of fan, which is very AEW. So I do like it. It works for me. It is funny that like both companies have a tournament going because WWE, of course, launched a US title tournament. And I'm like, this is just so pro wrestling, so Coke versus Pepsi. Like, whatever one company does, because AEW does that all the time too. Like, whatever one company does one thing, now they have to do it over there. So the WWE tournament is definitely simpler. It's just a, eight, four guys, quarterfinal, semifinals, final. That's it. Winner's number one contender. So, but I do like this Continental Classic, and I like how long it goes. Like, it's a long tournament, like 2 months or whatever it takes to do it. I think that's pretty cool, actually. I like it.
Well, and I think it gives a little more breathing room from just cramming the shows full of storylines, right? Like, you can still have, and you still will have storylines, but this gives something different to track, a little more long term, which, yeah, I love a tournament if it's done well. Like I said last week, you see some odd matchups that maybe you wouldn't normally see, and yeah, I'm totally on board.
Yeah, it's good. I like it. I can't wait to see. I think the finals are going to be at the pay-per-view, I think. At is
That would make
that at
sense.
World's End, I believe, is the one at the end of the year. So
Yep, I think that makes sense.
yeah. There was another match in the tournament that so you wouldn't have got to it. It was at the end. Andrade and Danielson was
Oh,
the main well, that was the main event. So X like you hear those two names, especially with Bryan Danielson. Excellent match. I still think the nah, I think that previous match was better, but it was Bryan Danielson's always got because it's his like last hurrah, right? This last year of his career, he's doing all kinds of extreme things. So he's been selling this eye injury, and so of course it gets a little gross at one point with like it's bleeding. It's AEW, so blood and gouging into the eye, and but it wasn't too much. It was actually really good. I really enjoyed it, especially Nigel McGuinness going, ah, here's the American clam digger. Like, what a great insult for Bryan Danielson. He says it so casual. I was gonna do the accent, but let's face it, I can't do Scottish accents. But yeah, the American clam digger. I
It
love
makes
it.
me giggle every time.
Yeah. So yeah, that collision was the best collision I think I've watched since it aired. I liked every match. Willie Mack was back, and
Oh,
I'm
I love Willie Mack.
like, I don't know where he was, but he's back, and I love everything about that guy. He is the epitome of a jobber because I don't remember seeing Willie win very much. He's won occasionally, but he will always put on an amazing match. He puts people over. He'll lose, and but he'll always make himself look good. Like he's
Yeah,
fantastic.
which brings a really good energy. And that's the first time I saw him was he was in New Japan when I was still watching that a couple months ago. And yeah, just he's just got that instantly likable charisma that yeah, he just brings that extra something to a match.
So it was cool that that collision was the one filmed here in Montreal. So the Canadian crowd getting into all the whenever Kenny Omega came out, crowd goes crazy. So it was it was a good show that I watched from my couch and not from the stadium. But hey, you don't I didn't get COVID on my couch, so that worked out
Yeah.
well.
Well, and I was thinking of you actually in the only other match that I've seen from AEW in recent memory, and that was Edge versus Christian because I mean, it's in Montreal and they are your boys.
Right? Did you
So,
watch
yeah.
it?
I saw, well, AEW posted the last, I would say last half of the match on their
Okay.
YouTube channel, and
Yeah.
that's what I caught.
Nice.
So
Yeah, it's hard to believe that I wasn't at that, but also it is believable because, of the circumstances, but big live shows and it just didn't work out, but yeah, I'm so glad I actually got to see that match 'cause it was exactly what I hoped it would be. It was mean and it was rough. It was two friends that are like they're lifelong friends that now are portraying themselves as, I love the way they're writing the story. Christian saying he's been held back by Edge and, Edge got all the things that he was supposed to get. Like it's, the friendship is over and it was just a very well set up story that, yeah, the match was really good. I didn't actually know I thought maybe Edge might win the title at one point. But for bump of the year, Christian kicks the ref in the balls from behind. I haven't seen a ref get kicked in the nuts in years, like years since I've seen that. I was like, that's the last spot I expected in that match. Edge is down and he just walks up and kicks the ref in the balls. I'm like, wow, like damn. And then it just got nuts at the end with the I can't remember what her name was. She showed up with the with and she smoked him with the title.
Oh,
I
yeah,
didn't actually,
it's the
I didn't know her.
mother. Yeah, and I keep for it's a younger wrestler, and that's
Yeah.
his mother, and yeah, it's Christian being a whole father figure,
Right,
so
right. The start of that whole weird father gimmick that he was doing. So, yeah, so it got weird at the end with the belts, but good match. I enjoyed it. Crowd was excellent. That was from Dynamite last week, so yeah, I only saw the last like hour of Dynamite 'cause the less Taz in my ear, the better. So
What are you talking about?
you're probably like, yeah, Carl's gonna mention Taz at some point here. He drives me crazy, and that's okay. It's a subjective thing. We're all allowed to like who we like. I just can't listen to Taz. He's got one of those voices that, my goodness, just drives me up the wall. I'd rather listen to Booker T going whack whack ducky smack whack or whatever. That kind of drives me crazy too. But I'll take that over Taz any day. Anyway.
Yep, they can't all be gold. The only time, because I don't watch AEW Wednesdays, the only time I ever hear Taz is on the pay-per-views, and AEW does that thing where they cycle their
Oh,
announcers through the pay-per-views, so you get that rotating roster of announcers, which is
yeah.
fine. It's
Oh, totally.
good. Because I would say by and large, their announcers are really good, and it kind of changes the mood and the flavor a little bit too, and obviously it sells them off. So
Totally.
yeah, it's really good.
Maybe skip the JR segments or shorten them a little bit, just because he's another one that I love JR, the history of JR, but I think it's time for him to stop. It's the He's falling behind. He's just that's what it is. He's kind of falling behind, and you can tell they're helping him along. Everyone's helping JR along. It's like, yeah, oh, that's you're supposed to be helping us along. You're the announcer.
Well,
We're
and
the viewer.
we've said it before where it just kind of creates an odd dynamic where it's kind of like they're trying to, play off of him a little bit, but they've already it's an existing announcer's booth that they've been going the whole show, and now it's now they have to play to his weaknesses and strengths. So
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I don't mind it from time to time, but yeah, it seems like it's always like now it's the main event. Here comes JR. All right, well, whatever.
Did you get caught up on NWA?
I did. I am current on NWA. That is the one I will always be current on, and it's an easy show to get caught up on because it's 45 minutes a week, right?
Yeah,
So
exactly. So this week's Power was not a studio show. So they must have filmed that. That wasn't from the pay-per-view arena either, I don't think. So that must be
nope.
like they set up I guess they must have just toured and done a Power in another city.
They're in Florida right now. And so this is just the show they put on in Florida. So this is part one of, it's probably, well, at least part two, maybe even part three. I don't know how long the show was, but yeah, for sure.
Because
And
I
actually, I
actually,
thought the arena looked really good.
well, I actually really liked it and kind of wished that that was Power more often. Like that, they had entrances and it was just like, I would imagine that's what Billy's going for, is that eventually he'd like to, because WWE and AEW tour. Like every show is in a different town, right? And you move around the country, and that's how you run your business. So I'd imagine that their area is kind of that, mid-south sort of like they're like from as high as like Minnesota down to Florida is kind of where their region just move
Yeah.
from town to town. It doesn't always have to be in the same city, in the same studio. I like the studio thing, but also it's sometimes the atmosphere is a little bit lacking. And
Yeah.
that atmosphere was great for that show. I really
Yeah.
thought it was excellent. So,
Yeah, I agree. And I like the studio setup to some degree. Like I love the production value, but one thing I will say that I do miss is that the old studio setup, you saw the crowd, right?
but
Like you
you
saw
never see the
Orange
crowd
Santa.
anymore. Yeah.
You just
Hear
hear
him.
people cheering from the background, and you just, I don't know. I'm always wondering, like, is that just the crew that's filming? Like,
I
you don't
know.
know who's there cheering.
It also takes me as a viewer out of it because wrestling is supposed to be in the middle of a crowd. So just it's like they're fighting in an empty arena, like during COVID or something. So the US tag titles from NWA that we used to sort of slag and we hated the champions. Now the Immortals have
Well,
them.
one of us did.
Well, now they have a chance, like the Immortals have the belts, and I'm like, hey, the US tag belts are pretty cool. Like I'm suddenly
Yeah.
completely fine with them. I'm fine with the belts. I'm fine with them existing with like two title belts in the same promotion. It just I guess it was those country gentlemen that were just driving me insane. So yeah, I that the match that the Immortals had on Power with
Brothers of Funstruction.
was that who it was? That was a really
Yep.
good match. Like I really enjoyed
Yeah.
it a lot. The end was a little funky. I didn't like that third team coming out. That made the end really kind of sloppy. I don't know why they did that. But that should have
Well,
happened.
and Joe's trying to sell it like we know who it is, and it's like,
I
oh, the
know.
kids are here. The kids are here. I'm like, whose kids are there?
I know they do that sometimes. They expect us to believe that we know we don't know. You're trying to tell us we know, but we know we don't know who this is. So it's your favorite team is here. We're like, who? What the hell is going on here? So they could have waited till the match was over because I didn't like that it was like they didn't get a res like there was no pinfall. It was a
Yeah.
disqualification. I'm like, what? And then the kids could have come out like afterwards, but even that would have made no sense. It really was
Yeah.
like a cheap effort to start a feud that with
Yeah.
people we don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And I'm assuming they're local Florida wrestlers,
I'm
probably
assuming so
from the
too.
local promotion, because we saw that when they were in like the Chicago area and New Orleans and stuff like that, which I really like. I love that they do that because
Me too.
you see a lot of different talent. And I agree. That bothered me too because it was two strong teams, and yeah, it just kind of sucked the wind out of the whole match. You're just kind of like, oh, okay, we're doing this. All right.
Yeah. So a couple weeks ago I mentioned that the slime balls were not my favorite
Yeah.
name for a team. And I don't know if I like them as a team. That's still to be decided. But there's a new team that I quite like actually in the ring. But name-wise, we have another total fail. The Heavenly Butterflies?
Oh yeah.
Like, are you seriously call yourself the Heavenly Butterflies? That's a wrestling name I'm supposed to take seriously as a fan. They came out, I'm like, what the fuck? Like, that's gotta be one of the worst wrestling names I've ever heard. The Heavenly Butterflies. And in the ring, they were pretty good. So the thing that bothers me about that is that someone has given them that gimmick. There's no way they came up with that name, because it where did the where's that, like, you look at them, but they don't really represent that. They didn't dress like, nothing really made you think Heavenly Butterflies. Like, it's the weirdest, most random name. So I really hope that they and the slime balls can each reach into the gimmick hat and get a new gimmick. Just go by your real names, whatever, it doesn't matter.
I love the enthusiasm that the slime balls bring. Like, I like them. I don't like their gimmick because they're all in,
Oh,
and
they
good
are.
on them,
Oh, yeah.
because like they talk to the crowd and they are into it, which I can respect. Like, they do bring a good energy, and they have embraced it, as bad as that gimmick is. But I don't mind them. I just, yeah, I wish they'd have a little bit of an aesthetic change, shall we say.
You know what makes me laugh? So I enjoyed Colby Carino, as always, defending the junior heavyweight title. But I love the weight rule for the junior heavyweight title, and how there's no scale involved. It comes down to what Joe says on the mic. So sort of like with Joe introducing wrestlers to us that we should already know, he'll also tell you, well, don't worry, he came in just under the weight limit. He was working out like 5 minutes before he got here, and he just squeezed down that last half a pound. Because that guy came out, and I was like, okay, that's no light heavyweight. That dude is jacked. Like, that guy was 240 minimum. And Joe's like, oh yeah, he's just fit under that. I don't remember what it is, 225 or whatever the weight limit is. Like,
He cut
what?
weight for the fight. He cut weight for the fight.
Half of him is it doesn't fit into the junior light heavyweight title. So anyway, that made me laugh. I think it's just one of those like wrestling rules that's like, no, it doesn't matter what we think he weighs. They will tell us how much he weighs. And the Andre the Giant weighed 600 pounds. No, he didn't. He did not. Hulk Hogan was not 7 foot tall. Yeah, it's been consistent. It's been very consistent. It's not like I said last time, it's not blowing me away. But it's a very consistent show right now where I'm enjoying. They've gotten rid of some of the people that I really didn't like, and there's really, yeah, there's no wrestlers that are bothering when they come out and I go, oh, skip this one. No, that's not really happening right now. So I'm looking forward to, I think the next pay-per-view is in January. Can't remember what it's called. We'll find that out
Yeah,
later.
that's typically when they do it. I am curious to see where this whole Samantha Starr heel turn's going, because I mean, she's very young and still establishing herself. It just doesn't feel natural, because up till now she's been portraying the very, girl next door vibe. So
Yeah, good call. Good call.
she's got skills on the mic, and it's early days. I mean, Stone Cold Steve Austin was not Stone Cold Steve Austin like everybody remembers right out of the gate. Like, sometimes it just takes a little bit to kind of figure it out and settle in. So I'm curious to see where this is going.
And yeah, I think that's about all I got for NWA, unless you got anything else you want to dive into.
Nope, that's all I got.
Well, tis the season. I thought it'd be kind of fun, holiday season, for us to do something a little different here on this episode before Christmas. We challenge each other with a little bit of Mount Rushmores. We can spit out some categories at each other, and we can name off our top four from different categories and from past, present, and future. And we'll see what we come up with here. So, I
We
did
should do
these.
this in a year too and see how different our answers are.
I
Because you could
agree.
ask me next week and I'd probably come up with different answers.
Totally, totally. So I told you to come up with some ideas. I did the same thing. I didn't tell you which ones I'm gonna pop on you. So, but in the spirit of the season, I'm gonna let you go first. So you spit out the first category, and we'll do our first Mount Rushmore.
First one up, I'm gonna lob up a lollipop, or tis the season, so lob up a candy cane. We'll start out easy. Favorite belts.
A Mount Rushmore of title belts. Okay, wow. I love title belts. I'm staring at one right now. So obviously, the classic WWF Intercontinental Championship that Macho Man held, Honky Tonk Man. And this isn't a rank. This is not one through four. It's just your four. So that's on my list. Oh boy, I have a soft spot for that NWA television title, the red belt. Every time I see it, it makes me happy. That's one of those titles that just fills me with joy. So I'm actually going to throw the NWA television title
Nice.
on there.
Nice.
The WWF Classic Tag Team Belts that Hart Foundation had. Demolition Head. I know there was
Yep.
silver and gold versions. I prefer the silver version of that title. It looked a little, I don't know, old school. The gold looked a little more modern. I don't know why that is. So that'd be in my third, fourth title. God, it's Mount Rushmore's. The first three is like, yep, no problem. You get to the fourth and it's like only one more out of all the titles that have ever existed.
Who am I
Fuck. Right?
excluding?
So
Yep.
I used to think it would be the Gold Belt, yeah, the old WCW, NWA, World Heavyweight Championship in WWE, but then there's the 10 pounds of gold from NWA, which I love. But oh, fourth title. I love title belts so much. The winged belt, WWF, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Hulk Hogan, Macho Man.
Yep.
All right, that's my number four. Yeah, those are my four. What do you got?
Nice. Yeah, actually, mine aren't going to be too dissimilar from yours. The old school winged heavyweight championship belt, because being a big Brett fan back in the day, a Hogan fan, that just was the belt. I have to include the 10 pounds of gold. I love that belt. It's got such a
Yeah.
classic, sleek design.
But also
And
unusual with that, with the ball, like the globe in the middle, 3D
yep.
sticking out. That's so different than other belts.
Yeah, I love that. The classic tag team belts that you mentioned, love those, because being a big fan of tag team wrestling, and of course in the formative years of, like you said, Demolition, Hart Foundation, British Bulldogs, like those were so iconic. That was the formative years of like my wrestling fandom.
Yeah.
Tag team, you had like all these classic tag teams that I love. Those were the belts that they were wearing.
Love
How
them.
could I not pick those? And then last would be the WCW big gold plate. Like, I just
Big
love
goalie.
that they I love that the champ's name was inscribed on the bottom. I
Yeah.
thought that was just a really cool way of personalizing it. So that's cool. And just honorable mention, I love the NWA's women's heavyweight belt. I love that the
The
bird.
Burke. Yeah.
I love that the champ has their picture in the center of the belt. I think that's a cool touch. So honorable
Nice.
mention, but yeah, those are my four.
I love it. Okay. All right. All right. Beautiful. Okay. My category that I'm gonna throw your way, my first one is going to be feuds. Your Mount Rushmore of feuds. Who and
Ooh.
who and when?
All right.
Yeah.
That's a really good one.
I know.
I wouldn't be a Bret Hart fan if I didn't say Bret versus Shawn.
Oof,
Just
yeah.
pick and choose. It doesn't matter.
Well,
There were
because
many years that
they hated each other for
hated
real.
each other.
Like for
And
real.
being a Bret mark for many years, I legit hated Shawn Michaels. I've relented
Right.
and I understand both sides of the story now. But there was a long time
Oh,
that
yeah.
I really despise Shawn Michaels. I no longer do. So yeah, Bret and Shawn. Not that I saw a lot of it, but just everything you see about it, it's just the heat. And I mean, how could you not go with, we're gonna have a movie about it. We're gonna have the Von Erichs versus the
The
Freebirds.
Freebirds,
I've watched
right?
a few.
Yeah.
It's legendary, and maybe it's a cop out because I didn't actually see a ton of the matches, but just everything you see about it is
Oh
just
yeah. It's the
incredible.
legacy of that speaks for itself enough to make you a fan of that feud. So
Yeah.
I can't wait for that movie. Oh my God.
Then Demolition versus British Bulldogs.
Oh
Love
yeah.
that feud.
Oh yeah.
It wasn't a long feud, but
No.
there's a lot of really, really memorable moments, like, the tag team bout that the British Bulldogs had Matilda the dog and
Oh yeah.
Demolition. Wasn't that the one where Bobby the Brain Heenan was in like some kind of like suit? I
Oh,
can't remember.
when he was
No,
wearing the
because Bobby.
that was the dog trainer outfit that he wore in WrestleMania with he was in WrestleMania 4, I think it was. So he would have been with
Yeah.
like the Islanders, I think, like with Haku and
Yeah.
Tama. I think that's what
That makes more sense, because I'm
yeah.
like, Bobby the Brain Heenan was not with Demolition. That was Mr. Fuji.
Yeah. But I remember the Bulldogs. That was right before Demolition's babyface turn. That was their last
Yep.
feud, I think, before they. And I always thought that was weird. I didn't love Demolition as much as a babyface. They were That's a heel team, man. Just look at him. What the hell?
I agree. And then just going old school because, again, formative years. I don't know why this resonates with me, probably because it was a little bit goofy, but Macho versus George the Animal Steel. Like that just, when I was a kid, it just made me laugh. And it just, I don't know,
Right,
it was just fun for the time.
a lot of good humor in that feud, a lot of good funny spots, and so that's your four. That's a good four, and I like that that feud can lead instantly into my first feud, because the George the Animal Steel Macho Man feud led directly into the Macho Man Ricky Steamboat feud, the most important feud in my wrestling fandom growing up, because that was really the first feud that I was emotionally invested in, was Ricky Steamboat, the baby face, who you're supposed to like, but I'm a kid and I love Macho Man. So I hated Ricky Steamboat. Like, how do you hate the best baby face like of all time? I found a way because I couldn't stand his face when I saw it. That feud, oh man, that was such a fierce feud. When Macho Man lost his title to Ricky Steamboat, it felt like the Flames losing the Stanley Cup to me. Even though it's like I didn't really understand wrestling at that point, right? Like, you grow up, now we know. But back then, it literally was like my team lost the Super Bowl. I was devastated. So that feud was, off the hooks. Most of mine are going to be old school just because they still ring so true to me. Bulldogs and Heart Foundation was just, that was the first tag team feud that I saw. I got to see that cage match live, Bulldogs versus Heart Foundation, front row in front of a steel cage. Like, good Lord, like that as a kid, just like wrestling is amazing. Like that feud was so great. They got Danny Davis involved when the belts got stolen. Like there was a lot of drama in that feud. Love that feud. Hogan versus Andre was larger than life. Like I was watching TV and I'll never forget the day Andre tore his shirt off. Like I was watching that on Saturday and it ruined my day. I was just, what just happened? Like I could, the earth shook when he tore that crucifix off his chest. And that was such a powerful moment, to come up with that idea to turn the ultimate hero into a villain. Mwah! Chef's kiss to Vince and to Andre and to Hogan for coming up with that one. That was just a beautiful thing that led to one hell of a feud that led to like some of the biggest matches I've ever seen. And then I guess I should pick something that's not from the 80s. The Rock and Stone Cold was in the Attitude Era, just it's just insanity. Like those two were both the biggest mouths, the biggest attitudes I'd ever seen in wrestling. I'd never seen two guys that could just walk out with a mic and just jabber, screaming at the audience, and the audience is going bananas. And they would both do that during this feud. There was times where you didn't know who was the face and who was the heel, and Stone Cold working with Vince and just blood and guts. That feud was just awesome. It lasted so long, and I love that feud. That feud, that completes my list, I think.
Nice. Solid four. And I would gladly include those on my list too, but
All
all right.
right, what do you got?
Back to me. Here's one that's a little bit different. Wrestlers that you didn't appreciate at the time, but you now do.
Oh, all right. That's probably lots of wrestlers. I can put, okay, so The Rock for sure, because I did not like The Rock initially, just like everyone. I was part of the Rocky Maivia sucks group, and then he joined, then he turned heel. Well, now he's a villain. I hate that guy. So it just, by the time he turned face again, I was right on board. Like they played me like a fiddle. So definitely The Rock would be one that went from obscurity to becoming like the biggest performer on the planet. Definitely. I would say Brock Lesnar is one of these funny guys that I despised for years because he's just so good at being Brock Lesnar. And then he got old and grumpy and gross, and so I hated him for those reasons. But in the last like year and a half, I finally got it. And I understand him now. And I have this his final match. I don't know if it was his final match, but he hasn't wrestled since. I just had this brand new appreciation for him when he wrestled Cody. You watched that match at SummerSlam. And I'm like, I get this guy. Like he understands the business so well. And I'm like, he probably always has. I just was watching it from a different lens where he was just the villain or the guy I was cheering against, or God, he drives me crazy or whatever. But or the guy that ruins everything, because I used to call Brock Lesnar the guy that ruins everything. I was enjoying this show, and then Brock Lesnar ruined it, you know? So definitely, definitely Brock Lesnar. Well, I guess I have to say Ricky Steamboat, because I hated his guts as a kid, and I didn't see any of his like NWA feud with Flair till I was much older. And just most of his great stuff from those years I saw after he was retired. So, but when you hear him talk, he's such a great guy. He's such a nice man. And the fact that he's still performing now is kind of crazy, because he's not a young man. He shouldn't be taking some of those bumps that I saw him take on AEW, actually. But yeah, it's impossible not to like Ricky Steamboat. Like, what the hell? So definitely Ricky Steamboat. And a final wrestler. Well, I could almost say Ric Flair, because one of the biggest names in the business. But when he was at his height, I wasn't seeing any of it. I only saw him on magazines, so it didn't mean anything to me. And by the time I saw him, he came to WWF, and he was such a prick. So he did such a great heel character that I didn't like him at all. The way Ric Flair looks is so underwhelming too, that, you know, I'm used to Hulk Hogan, and Flair shows up and he's this like no build, and, you know, he's bleach blonde
kind
hair,
of an everyman.
Yeah. I'm like, what is the, so I definitely did not buy into Flair right away. I was almost disappointed from the hype that I had heard to what I saw. I was like, what? And it was just years later of just watching him just keep going for decade after decade. I got to see when he, you know, his matches with Shawn Michaels and stuff were just legendary. And then going back and seeing his work in Mid-South and seeing his work in WCCW and AWA and NWA. And I'm like, oh my God, I so get it now. Like, I get to see all of his different, I almost say personas, but he's admitted it's just one persona. It's him. So he has no gimmick. He's Ric Flair. So I'll say Ric Flair.
Nice.
Yeah, what do you got?
I will actually piggyback on the Ric Flair. He's on my list because, again, like growing up and not really having access to anything other than Stampede Wrestling and WWF at the time. Yeah, you hear the name Ric Flair, and by the time you see him, he's not at the height of his powers. Not that he was bad, yeah, but he's not, you know, late 70s, early to mid 80s Ric Flair. He's 90s Ric Flair. So he's, I mean, say past his prime, but when you wrestle that long, when is your prime? You probably have a couple. And just educating myself to what he meant to the territories and being that traveling champion. And I just have such a better appreciation for what he meant to the wrestling business, aside from what I was seeing at the time that I wasn't appreciating. So yeah, I'll piggyback on the Ric Flair. To keep the Ric train rolling, Rick Rude. He's a wrestler that because I was such a mark for Jake the Snake Roberts. I hated Rick Rude when I was a kid.
Yeah.
But then growing older and seeing just not even seeing older matches or different matches, but watching it and appreciating his ability to work the character into his in-ring work. For sure, like I became a much bigger appreciator of Rick Rude's work.
That's a good one. That's a good one. I like, yeah. I'm the same on that one. The same story. So yeah.
Ted DiBiase, he again kind of fits into that. Where
good one.
I thought, oh, this guy's just a rich when I was a kid. Oh, it's just a rich prick. He can kind of wrestle. Like, he's not embarrassing in the ring, but he's not great. But then when we were watching Mid-South Wrestling a couple of years ago, actually seeing him younger and seeing him work a different angle and not be the Million Dollar Man, man, that just totally opened up my eyes to his skill level and what he could do.
And as far as his later career goes, if you want to watch the apex mountain of Ted DiBiase was WrestleMania 4. That tournament where he went all the way to the end, he had Andre the Giant in his corner, but his matches that he had, you got to see the skill that he had four times that he wrestled four, or I guess he had a bye, so three times. So that's that match against Macho Man, like, he represents so well in that match, and such a great heel. Like, he's such, God, he's one of the best heels ever, I think. So
yeah, I agree. And then to round out my Mount Rushmore of people I didn't appreciate it at the time, I mentioned it earlier, Shawn Michaels. I just, it's funny because my fandom of Shawn Michaels ebbed and flowed because I liked the Rockers. I was on board with the Rockers, but then kind of his heel turn, there was just something about him I didn't like. And it was that kind of smarminess and being a Bret Mark. Just, yeah, what he was doing at the time didn't work for me at all. But now that I look back at it, I'm like, yeah, I was just picking sides essentially. Nobody was right, nobody was wrong. And I was just blinded to, sure, he wasn't perfect, and sure, he had his own personal issues and everything that affected his career. But as far as charisma, work rate in the ring, like, holy shit, he's one of the best ever. So
Oh yeah,
my
totally.
opinion has totally done a 180 on Shawn Michaels.
Nice. Fantastic. Love it. I love the Heartbreak Kid. It's and now he's working. He works for NXT and he's training the future of WWE wrestlers. And like that's so perfect. You have his buddy Triple H running the big show and he's running the developmental. It's DX ruling the world. I love it. All right. So I guess we'll do one more. And
Okay.
I think we should definitely come back and do this again because
I
this is
agree.
fun. So this last one is kind of fun. I thought of this one this morning while I was getting ready. Your Mount Rushmore of gimmick matches. So you got your singles matches, you got your tag team matches. That's great. But there's a million other matches that we see all the time through history of wrestling. And there's some that are great and there's some that aren't. What's your Mount Rushmore of gimmick type matches?
I am not a fan of gimmick matches at all.
Now remember, that includes everything, whether it was a
Yes.
bull rope, a steel cage, everything,
A
right?
miner's
So
glove.
Yeah, it's all there, man. It's all there.
I'm gonna go cage match because I mean, as a kid, I fucking loved cage matches
All
and I
right.
still love cage matches. How can you not?
Yeah, exactly.
So cage matches is an easy one in there. Coal miner glove match, I guess, because it was kind of the precursor to like the ladder in the middle of the ring with the briefcase. It was kind of the
Totally.
precursor to that,
Yeah,
right? And
totally.
it's just kind of ridiculous that this person could get this illegal object and then they could essentially use it in the ring.
But also kind of awesome that that's the only legal weapon. I think there should be more matches that are like a steel chair match should be a steel chair match. There's one chair, that's the chair you can use. If you use anything else, you're disqualified. But that chair sitting over there is free game. Smack each other around with it. I like that kind of stipulation. Or the title belt. Make the title belt. Yeah. Lie it in the ring. You can use that all you want, but that's it though. That's the only thing you're allowed to use, you know? So.
Tables, ladders, chairs, that's an easy one too.
Chaos. Love them.
Yeah.
Love them.
Chaos. And then I don't know if this would be quantified as a gimmick match, but I don't know. I always like the matches where there'd be a huge heated rivalry, and then at some point you'd have this tag team match and their manager would have to wrestle in the match. So you'd have, like we mentioned earlier, Bobby the Brain Heenan or Mr. Fuji or Danny Davis, who wasn't a manager, but he was, the ref. So
I would
I
say
don't know.
that I
Might be
would
a bit of a
say
cop out, but
no, that's a six-man tag with the gimmick being that the manager has to be involved. So that's totally a non-traditional gimmick match because that's not a singles match, it's not a tag team match. That's a six-man tag with a special partner, as they call it, because sometimes it's a referee or it's the manager or whatever. So yeah, no,
So I
that's good.
guess talking it through, I don't despise gimmick matches as much as I have in my
Well,
brain.
okay,
How about you? What's on your list?
cage match. I'm just gonna copy it for the first one because to me the ending to a feud, you can't end it any better than a steel cage match. It was the first match I ever saw in wrestling, turning on TV, black and white, seeing Tito Santana and Greg Valentine. That was my first match, was a cage. Like, this is insane. What the hell am I watching? Just the excitement of if two guys hate each other too much or two girls can't stand each other, let's just have the GM or the boss go get in that cage and deal with your shit. Like, it's awesome. Just fantastic. I love it. I'm a huge fan, and this is not utilized at all anymore. I love a lumberjack match. I've loved them since I was a kid. The story you can tell with a lumberjack match is so great. I don't know why you don't see them all the time. have a feud going, and your ring is surrounded by wrestlers. Half the ring is surrounded by baby faces, half by heels. And these two people are being thrown out of the ring, and then they get grabbed by whichever group is against them on the outside, and they toss them back inside. You can't run, you can't hide. You get fights on the outside between the baby faces and the heels. I love a lumberjack match, and you never see those anymore, but I think they're fantastic. I've always been a huge fan. You mentioned the coal miner's glove. I was going to mention any match that involves a single weapon being the only legal item. So I think there should be more of that. If it's going to be like every match is a is extreme rules, a street fight, back alley brawl, so it's a no disqualification match. Like every they have all these stipulation matches that it's just a no DQ match. Like stop making it sound like it's something elaborate. Every no disqualification match, you can have extreme rules and street fight and grab weapons. They're all the same. So I'd like to see more where it's actually specifically, okay, for this one, you can use that ladder or that table, and that's it. At least a tables match has to end through the table. So I like that. But I've always thought that just the table should be legal. You shouldn't be allowed to use anything else. Make it more creative. Because these get when it's just unlimited weapons, it just the creativity goes out the window, and it's just people smashing stuff over each other's heads. And
It just becomes one note.
yeah, so I think any match where just one weapon is the and so a coal miner's glove, maybe not a football helmet. I remember that being a really stupid match in itself. So we'll just Dr. Death. I believe Steve Williams was in that with someone. I don't remember who.
Yes, you would
Terrible
be
match though.
correct.
Yeah.
That was a good one-time
Yeah.
watch. Well, no, it wasn't.
You said TLC, so I'll leave that off my list because you already talked tables, ladders, and chairs. Great gimmick. But for my fourth, I do love gimmick matches when they're done properly. I actually really love the Elimination Chamber in WWE because it's so like elaborate and like Running Man, like sci-fi, this giant structure with all these pods, and like there's just so much to it that I find that it's like a game show, like the things flash. Okay, who's gonna get his ass kicked next? Like it's this fascinating thing that shouldn't work at all. And yet every year, even my wife looks forward to it. Every year we look forward to who's gonna be hanging off the top of the chamber and come crashing down, who's gonna get slammed through the glass of the pods. Like there's so many different bumps that can happen in that chamber that yeah, I gotta go Elimination Chamber, I think. So
Nice.
yeah. That was fun. We'll come back and do some more. And if anyone has any specific categories they would like to hear us talk about, please shoot us a message through the socials. We'll take your requests under advisement. Okay, well, it's time to wrap things up. Huge thanks to all the listeners that joined us this week. Don't forget to subscribe and download the episode in your podcast app of choice. Every little bit helps us. Spotify users, you can now interact directly with the podcast in-app as we add Q&As and polls for every episode, so check those out. And we even try and read out your responses, so let us have them. And you can now reach the podcast on Instagram at Murder Gymnastics Pod. I try and post daily, so pop on over for fun memes, pics, and videos. And of course, Paul, if people got nothing going on, what should they do?
Go watch some wrestling! Yeah!